All right. It's fine with me. Okay, so I want to briefly summarize the basic stuff that we've seen until now. Generally, we know that Haskalah Samalach has a kinyan, which means that you don't need a separate ma'aseh kinyan for a schiras kolim agreement, right? They're just discussions between the parties, and then once one party begins to perform, that constitutes a binding agreement. You can see here's another example of this. Chuvas Rashba and Dalad Reish Nun Ches. So Reuven came into an agreement with Shimon to marry off Levi. He said, if you marry off Levi, I'll pay you a certain amount of money. They didn't do a kinyan. Shachin went ahead and ended up finding a shidduch for Levi. So the Rashba says, you can never back out. Once the shachin ends up performing the service, the shachin read the shidduch, as they say. So the imkafayat, if you have a little mishadna, you see. You can't now back out once the service is provided. But it's a special rule of spiros and shlichus that it's exempted from this idea that you could claim the shabbat nibucha, that I was not serious in the absence of a kinyan. Rather, special rule when it comes to spiros polim that you don't need a kinyan, you're bound by the terms of the bargain for agreement once there's a kind of performance. Now, the sugyas that we've been seeing are exceptions to this rule. The sugya in Bava Kama Kuf Tes Vav. Why is it an exception to the rule? Because the guy's running away from jail. He strikes a bargain with the ferry owner. There's no kinyan. And even though under the general rules of Sechiras Polim that would be binding, in this case it's not binding. Right? So this case constitutes an important exception. There are three basic cases that we saw. First case is the case of the ferry owner. Anybody remember the second case? Okay, remember the second case? Comes up in that same sugya. Tosos quoted about the...
Oh, the doctor.
Yeah, the medicine doctor case, exactly. Also, Baba Kama Kuf Tes Zayin, and also, I think, in Yevamos. You hire a doctor to go ahead and bring these certain herbs or medicines to the chola. Tosos says, if you agree to pay more than the fair market price, fair market rate... the halacha strikes down that bargain for amount and obligates you to only pay a reasonable price. The third case is Yevamos Kuf Vav Amud Aleph. Anybody remember the Yevamos case?
The Chalitza
case, right? So this guy wanted to do Yibam with a relative of Rapapa. The relative of Rapapa didn't want to do Yibam. She wanted Chalitza. So Rapapa said, let's induce him by promising to pay him 200 zuz for the service, for the chalitza. He did the chalitza, and they said, ha ha, we're not obligated to pay you, mishabah nibucha. And the Gemara pointed to the paradigm of the ferry case. Right? So in all three of these cases, we're saying there's a bargain for agreement. It was above the going market rate or something, and the halacha strikes it down in all three cases. It does not obligate you to pay the amount you agreed to pay. Now the Rishonim here, just to summarize what we've seen very briefly, the Rishonim here bring a few distinctions to bear on the sugya. So the Meiri and Rashi say that one thing you have to figure out is their hesed. Right? Did the service provider incur a loss by providing the service? So they said that if he did suffer a loss, then he's entitled to his compensation, at least one that's commensurate to the degree of his loss. The Rush went further than this, and I think here Cole is right, based on what he said the other day. The Rush goes much further than this and says, no, once there's any degree of hesed, then he's entitled to collect whatever amount he stipulated to pay. Why should that be? So he doesn't tell us. The Rush just says, Kimon sheyesh lo ketzas hefsed yitol kol ma she pasak lo. But the Ketzos in Siman Reish Samech Daled, Sifkat Beis, says exactly what Cole said, which is that because if he did suffer a loss, then the beneficiary is covered by Zenen of Zelo Chaser. And so if it's a Zenen of Zelo Chaser case, then the provider is not entitled to be compensated. But the moment there's a little bit of Chaser, then the provider is entitled to be compensated by the full amount that you stipulated to pay. So actually on this view, if you take the Ketzos's view, the only reason not to pay in this kind of a case is based off some theory of Zenan of Zelo Chasar. Right? I think the other way of going about it is to say...
That's what I said, right? That's what I said.
That's exactly what you said. 100%. That's why I'm bringing it up, right? He says... let me see if I get the quote. He says, here, De'im lo haya chaser klum, havale zenena v'ze lo chaser. Right, so the only reason why not suffering a hefsid is reason to stick to fair market value is because of the idea of zenena v'ze lo chaser. The other way of looking at it is that once there is a loss, you might think that triggers some aspect of pimiras das, right? You're agreeing to pay compensation in consideration for the loss that this guy is suffering. That creates like a real exchange with full gemiras das on both sides, and maybe that's how it would be binding. Now, there's an interesting question here as a side point. So, again, this first point is to say that when there's a loss, you're obligated to pay the bargain for amount. It's an interesting question, how do you quantify a loss? Right, is it a hefsid? Is it that there was some cost to providing the service? So the Tzos in that same sentence, if I'm in Gimel, says something interesting. Cole, you want to take a stab at the Tzos, if I'm in Gimel?
Vishakhanas?
Yep. Yeah. So what's his standard for loss? He's saying you have a shotgun, you agree to pay the shotgun a lot of money.
And he loses whatever amount of time.
Yeah. So even like, you know, he puts some energy into this, there's an opportunity cost, right? He could have been Marviach HaPruta. It's interesting, he thinks that's sufficient to render the shotgun as chaser.
It's not effort, though.
It's opportunity cost, right?
You're not compensating him for the time.
It's the pruta shahaya yachal laharviya.
It could be because the I don't know, it could be the Tzos is imagining what do you get compensated for? If you have the hammer and are striking the I don't know what people strike with hammers, but whatever they do. The shatan is like sitting around thinking,
that would encourage
Rahul,
right.
Sarah,
right. That's not gonna constitute a cost, right?
Exactly.
Right.
He could have been
the mental expenditure is not
right. He could have been something right. Like people like us, but he could have been hitting splicing rails or whatever. That's really what you're compensating.
Right. The important point here is that his standard for cost or costar is very low. That was the first consideration that Post can bring to bear. The second consideration that Post can bring to bear is did you front the payment or not? We saw this in Machlokes. The Rimu Neil said that if you front the payment, then you're locked into the bargain for amount. The Miri quoted a day that disagreed. So it's not super clear why fronting the payment should suddenly make this otherwise non-binding agreement into a binding one. The Rimu Neil's formulation in the Shin Tunku Betzes is the following. He says, Im nasan lo miyado liyado kodem sheikanes bima bores dinar zav, shuv einu yachal omer meshata ani b'cha kivan sheparo. It's like the fact that you paid him seems to elevate your gemiras das. Right? No longer playing meshata ani b'cha, you can't say I was just messing around, because you actually made payment, which shows that you had serious intent. Now, Shulchan Aruch actually paskens this way in Reish Samech Dalet Ches. If you front the payment, then you're bound by that amount. But I do want to point out there's an interesting machlokas here between the Radvaz and the Erech Shai about the significance of fronting the payment. So the Radvaz in Simin Tafkuf Nun Vav was asked the following case here. You want to take us through the Radvaz very quickly? Just a. Okay. Just tell us the Shaila here. I mean, it's a very straightforward Shaila. It has significance for us in other reasons, but just read the question.
So one person is sick, and just trying to medicine, and charge them a lot of money for the...
Yeah, price gouging on medicine, basically, right? I say I'll pay $1 million for the EpiPen. Right? I think it was price gouging. Right.
Price gouging, as I like to call it, pricing.
Pricing? It's because you're a libertarian. Right? Libertarians don't think there is such a thing as price gouging because the fair market value is just the fair market value, meaning the market value, right? What you get through.
That's true. The last calls it price gouging, the godless people call it pricing.
Right. So the Radvaz here says something interesting. He says, well, so there's this whole issue, if you overcharge, then we strike down the amount over the fair market value. But then he says, "V'im nasan lo davar." If you actually front the payment, which is what we're talking about, "im gamar v'im nasan l'shem matana gemura ein motzien miyado." If you fronted the payment as a gift, then you can't later try to recover the gift amount on the argument that you only gave it to induce the guy to perform the service. And he says, therefore. V'im nasan. Suppose you fronted the payment at the doctor who was extorting you. If you fronted the payment, mipnei shechashav shemechuyev min hadin litein. Suppose you come to the doctor. The doctor said, I'm charging $1 million for the emergency surgery. And you sign a paper and say, oh, it's great, yeah, sure. Not only do you sign, sorry, you cut out a check and give it to the doctor right then and there. So you only made the payment because you thought you were obligated to pay the amount that you agreed to pay. But you don't know the halakha. You think, oh, I signed a contract that says I'm going to pay $1 million for the service. I'm obligated to pay. He says, that would be a matana betros in Motsiyan Yemen. That you can later sue the doctor to recover that amount because of the matana betros. Because you only gave it on the grounds that you thought you were obligated to pay what you agreed to pay.
Guy's an Indian giver, no?
What?
Guy's an Indian giver, no?
What's an Indian giver?
It's like, it's somebody who, I'm not sure you're allowed to use that expression anymore, but it's somebody who gives a gift with the sub silencio, the expectation that somebody's given something that's going to be returned.
Okay, but that's not what's going on here. Here he's giving a gift thinking that he was obligated to give it.
Sorry. It's under false pretense.
Exactly. He thought the halakha is if I sign a paper saying I'll pay $1 million, he thought the false assumption that halakha is libertarian.
Right.
So if I agree to pay $1 million for a surgery, then I'm bound to pay it.
Right.
And then he finds out he went to the doctor and says, no. You know, that's the case. You're running away from jail. You're only obligated to pay fair market value.
Right.
This I want it back. So the Radvaz thinks he's entitled to get it back. Right? Now, the Pesachei Choshen quotes Arach Shai, who's very upset with this Radvaz. He says that's crazy because the whole reason why in general you're able to get it back is because you could say you didn't have full intent, you didn't have full gemiras das, right? You only gave it under conditions of duress or whatever. V'yim kein kishenasan harei muchach shelo niskavin lahashtos. And the whole point is that once you actually cut out the check, we see that you did have full gemiras das, the haraya, you intend to pay, you actually paid. So he says, the Radvaz has got to be wrong, because the whole point of the sugya is to tell us that once you cut that check out, you can't recover it. Why? Because that shows you had full intent to go through with this amount. The Radvaz's argument has got to be, no. Cutting out a check is not about showing us that you had full gemiras das. The only time cutting out a check would be binding is if you had intent, full intent, to gift it. But if you gifted it under false intention, i.e. you thought you were obligated to give it, then you could still recover it. So my focus here about what's the significance of fronting the payment. For the Radvaz, the significance is that we can construe it as a gift. And if we can't construe it as a gift, i.e. we know it was done by mistake, then you could recover. But in Arach Shai, no, it's not about construing it as a gift. It's about that reflects your true gemiras das. And the fact that you are willing to give it under, the fact that you actually gave it under those conditions, so shows that you had full gemiras das implicit.
How does the Arach Shai, how would fraud be possible to the Arach Shai's view?
Right, the fact that you're still willing to pay.
I think
you'd say that fraud can't be an issue of gemiras das. Like fraud would be like some other issue of Ona or Mekachtel is like you thought you were paying a different amount than you actually paid. So there's some like factual error.
So it's the basic.
Here there's like a legal error.
It is that there's a, it's basic. So basically, the Arshai is saying you're cutting the check means you abjure your right to the fair market value. Is the
that's right.
Okay.
As the Arshai is saying, it's like when you cut check, that shows that you're willing to pay this amount.
Yeah,
meaning it's kind of libertarian in that sense.
Yeah.
Right. It's like you. So maybe we're not libertarians about agreements to pay, but we're going to be libertarian about surely when you actually make the payment. Right. When you make payment, that's the value that you agreed on. Whereas the Radvaz says, no, this is never fair. Whereas anything above the fair market value here is never going to be the fair price or the actual price. We just have to construe it as a gift. And then if we have reason to view it as anything other than a gift, then we could rescind that transaction. Yeah, Yair and Ben, you have comments on this? Or I think it's very important, machlokas, about the significance of fronting the payment. Okay, the third, so those are the first two considerations. First, again, is there some loss to the service provider? The second, again, is whether you fronted the payment or not. The third consideration that the post can bring to bear is this discussion of whether people sometimes overpay for the service. Is the market itself like somewhat fixed? Or is this the kind of thing, kind of service that people generally overpay for? So remember here, the formulation in the Mordechai is that if a shadchan asks for an exorbitant amount of money for the service, Rabbeinu Simcha paskind, that you're chayiv to pay whatever amount you agree to pay the shadchan. Why is that? How is it different from the ferry case? So his standard was, shebischar shadchanim regilim lasleis harbe yoser michte tircha. Right, for shadchanim, it's regilin, it's customary to overpay, and that makes it binding. Okay? Again, devadavar zeh regilin lasleis yoser michte tircha. And he says the same thing applies to medicine cases. If it's customary for people to pay above fair market value, then lo demar zeh sichik. Can't interpret you as not having full intent because it's customary to sometimes overpay for these commodities. Now we might ask, well, what's the significance of the fact that other people overpay?
You and Zolti were having an argument about that.
Yeah, exactly.
Right, so Zolti said that The argument was how to interpret a Tosfos and Yevamos.
This Tosfos and Yevamos, as well as the same, the Mordechai also. The Zolti was conceding the Mordechai reading to me.
Okay, fine. So I forget the one. You wanted to say that if there's any range, then even payments outside the range.
Exactly.
Don't pick up. Zolti said, and I agreed with him, that no, the range sets the limit on what's permissible.
Yeah.
I'd say that I think that there's a big common sense consideration in his favor, which is that on your view, tiny deviations in payment would be able to qualify, enormous overpayments as non-fraudulent. Whereas on Zolti's reading is sensitive to
that variation. Yeah, good. So Ben, why don't you tell us? We just read this Pesach Choshen for us. Pesach Choshen here in Sif Chavav is citing this general idea that comes out of Mordechai and Tosfos about whether it's customary or okay. Then look at his comment on Tosfos. Why do we go there?
Sure.
That's the only time we'll invalidate the bargain for price.
Right.
Yeah. So right. So if it's customary to overpay, then you got to pay what you agreed.
What do you mean it is customary to? Is it a little?
How is that overpaying?
A circular. Yeah. No? It's customary.
If it's customary, then that's just the price.
Overpayment is fine.
So I'll address this point explicitly in 5 minutes.
Okay.
The short answer is that they don't have a supply and demand. Arguably, they don't have a supply and demand conception of market pricing. So it's like a lock-in labor value, it's like the value just is like how much you contribute in your labor effort,
okay,
which makes a lot more sense in
and the formulation of idei tircha.
Yes.
It's also like,
yes.
There's, you know, usually a certain amount of work generates an approximate amount of value.
That's right.
But in certain industries, it's wildly disproportionate.
Yeah, I think there's a good paper here to be written on like the underlying economic theory of pricing.
It would just make you depressed.
What?
It would just make you depressed.
Well, no, because you don't have to say that's a normative commitment. It's just an empirical presupposition.
That's even worse.
Why?
Because we know that prices are set based on the intersection of supply and demand.
Right, that means that the modern analogy then is just to translate the...
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Right, so there's no normative commitment to that system of pricing. There's just an empirical presupposition of it.
Okay, good.
Right. I'm not sure what you mean by that distinction.
So it's not that the halakha is saying that the right way to fix price, exactly. It's just saying that, assuming this is how prices are set, this is what a person ought to pay. And then once that assumption changes, right, then you just apply the way we see it.
You're able to cash it out in supply and demand terms. Of course, what labor, your output, your labor, there's no way if you hit the rail, really hard, it's not like a pruta pops out as a...
So within supply and demand understanding, you see that the demand is just very,
it's supply and demand under like perfect market conditions, as opposed to like supply and demand under like inefficiencies. Right? That's like another way of trying to do this.
Stimulus.
Well, yeah, it's all right. Right.
So, all the year. Yeah. Having information
research. Yeah. Usually, the Rutway is like not necessarily like the market value, but like what most people peg.
Something like that.
Things.
Yeah. I'm not trying to say about that in a minute, so hold up on that pricing question. Look at the basic question says, weighing, I think, on the Zolti me debate. Right. So, in a place where people pay more than, let's just say, the Kdei Tircha, I guess I take that as a stand-in for market rate, right? Then, Ein Lo Kitzva, any amount goes. Why? Vafilu Katzat. Sefer Torah. Right. But he's saying maybe once there are people who pay more than Rabbi, it becomes like a Sefer Torah that are Torah Chain Lim Kitzvah, which is where they have no market. Right? They have no market price. So again, it's also interesting for the underlying economic theory, saying, so if a Sefer Torah has, let's just say, we don't know how it's fixed, it has a market price, we don't know how it has a market price, let's just say it's stipulated by fiat. Sefer Torah is $20,000, but some people are going to pay $50,000 for Sefer Torah. That takes Sefer Torah out of this kind of market, out of like a fixed market price. Now, it's a Davar She'ein Lo Kitzvah, there's no such thing as overpaying for it. And it all just depends on bargain for agreement. All depends on the bargain for agreement. Very interesting theory, right?
This is your evidence against Zolti.
Yeah, this definitely leads much more into my way of looking at things. Under the specific economic assumption that once prices fluctuate too broadly, there is no market price for it. See that? I think some people think this about karkos, why there's no nah for karkos. Because like there's no proper way to set a market price, it's too subjective or too much speculation, and so there's no kind of enough for it. Cole, you have a comment? Okay.
I do think. Let me put it this way. Here's where I don't know how to cash out this intuition. My intuition is that if you have the kind of
we have Yakir. Hi, Yakir. I know he's going to unmute himself to say hi to us. Yeah, Kira, you can say hi to everyone. We'll see if he's listening. He probably has us muted also. Yeah.
Is this what I sound like?
It's a free thing.
Yeah, my intuition is that if there are a large number of cases, even within kind of a moderate size range, there's more of a case to say that the range bounds it. If you had five cases and they're all over the map or whatever, then I want to say that, like, an extreme case, just because you don't have a good baseline without a critical mass of cases. So these guys, which I think he's talking about, so Chef Thomas would be a great example where, like, you know, on the Upper West Side in the five towns, they're paying much more for it than in Wichita, Kansas, or whatever.
Right.
For diamonds, probably you wouldn't have that. There's a much better defined market for diamonds.
Yeah. Here.
Those are my feelings.
Good. So you're not opposed to the...
I will say that as markets get larger, I think Zolti's view will become more correct.
Okay. Good.
Is there a bathroom in this fort?
Yeah. You just walk out.
All right past the center building.
So those are the three main considerations that are brought to bear just in deciding whether or not to hold the beneficiary to the price that was bargained for. So hefsid, fronting the payment, and is the schar yoser me'aroy or not? Okay. Yakir, you with us? So yeah, Yakir back. Yakir, Gabe, any comments on this? Any of you?
Nothing for now.
What's that, Gabe?
Nothing for now.
Nothing for now. Yakir, any comments? Or we don't have Yakir. He's here, but he's not here. All right. Good. So now, I want to take a step back from the practical considerations and look more to the underlying conceptual idea that's embodied in the sugya. So why is it that the price is struck down in these cases? So why is it that the prices are struck down in these cases? What do you guys think?
Well, we had three theories on last Tuesday. Theory number one is that it was a chisavon in the das, they didn't really agree on the price.
Good.
The shot that goes off. The second theory is that there's sort of a way out based on the theory of Ones, that either the das under-dress isn't really Das, or that there seems a sort of policy, I'm reading off the board.
You're reading off my board. Okay.
No, I noticed the formulation policy consideration. That's the easy way of thinking about it. You know, we don't want to put people in that position of ONS.
You're stealing from my formulations, then.
Because you gave it to us on Tuesday. Of course we're stealing from the formulations.
Right.
The third theory was that there's an idea that, specifically with regard to mitzvah performance, one doesn't have a right to overcharge, but presumably in other cases,
So today I'm thinking more in terms of like four separate underlying ideas here. Just expanding a little bit on what you guys pointed out. First is that the reason why we're going to strike down the bargain for agreement here is because there's a lack of Gemira's Das. So I think the idea there is that, look, Gemira's Das, consent, is what makes all these contracts valid. If there's insufficient Gemira's Das, the contract is going to be invalid. And so the whole discussion in the sugya is just to say, we're trying to figure out when is there sufficient Gemira's Das and when is there insufficient Gemira's Das. And, you know, that's what all these considerations depend on. Is it Regilin, L'shalem, Yosem, and Aroi? Oh, then there's Gemira's Das. Did he front the payment? Oh, then there's Gemira's Das. Is there Hefsid? Then there's Gemira's Das. So one way of looking at the sugya is that all we care about in upholding or striking down agreements is Gemira's Das, and all these considerations are intrinsic to get at that. That's the first way of trying to approach our sugya. The second way of trying to approach our sugya is through the lens of Ona. That really, the halakha here is interested in what's a fair market value for the service that's provided. Generally speaking, the halakha is going to hold the parties to fair market value. And so this sugya might just be a variation of the sugya of Ona, meaning that an agreed-upon price that's so out of whack with what the fair market value is going to be struck down. Now, you might say that it's this idea in conjunction with some other idea, right? So it's the controlling idea is fair market value together with some other idea of insufficient Gemira's Das for the agreed-upon amount. But there's still an important distinction of what's the ikar and what's the kapha. So, for example, if you're looking at the sugya through the lens of Gemira's Das, you're saying, well, there's no agreement on the price because there wasn't sufficient Gemira's Das. As a default, we'll fall back on fair market value. The other way of looking at it, which is the second approach, is to say, no. Really, the halacha is skeptical of agreements that fall outside of the range of fair market value. That's why we're striking down the agreement. But if there really is like a strong agreement to override it, then sometimes we'll acknowledge it. But the real thing that's doing substantive work here on the second view is the fact that the halacha is skeptical of service agreements that fall outside of the range of fair market value, like a principle of Onah. Cole?
I have a quick just halacha shaila. If there is a good that usually costs 10 and we're operating under perfect information,
yeah,
and you consent to pay 100 for it, is that agreement valid?
So it's an Onah question.
Right.
Generally, in Onah, the rule would be that it's not valid.
Even if everybody knew what they were doing.
So unless, this is why I put over here, I put a little discussion here on the Pisrei Choshen here on page 7. So he's really trying to, he's saying, well, you know, it depends on like all these other factors, such as, here. Is yada u'machil. You know, do we assume that there was like an implicit mechila on the exorbitant amount? So the mechanism is not that, oh, the agreed upon price is valid. It's that it's invalid, but there's like some extra mechila that you're mochel on not getting the price that you're entitled to get.
Yeah, or so in other words, is the idea of Onah that like baseline we assume that people have in mind to pay for, you could view Onah as saying like baseline we assume that people have in mind to pay for the common price.
The
good,
fair market value.
Right,
yeah.
Right. And then the charging, you know, above whatever threshold is like interferes with is a kind of defrauding.
Yes, that's the classic Onah interpretation.
That's the classic Onah. Okay, great. Or,
and the only time we'll recognize the stipulated,
that's from Kibir Stas, right? And that seems to be what the Pisrei Choshen is trading on. Because if you can be mocha, if it's not an independent obligation to charge in accordance with then you should be able to, with the fair market value, then you should be able to get out of the problem with mechila.
Right.
As opposed to a view of a now, I guess, where there's like, no, I guess you could, you know, where you have an obligation, you just have an obligation to do it.
But I still, even that second interpretation is really, it's that I am not, it's like a kind of geneva to profit too much off the sale of a commodity.
Yeah, that's true.
Right? So we don't have to get too deep in Onah, but I'm saying one way to look at our sigha here is that it really is, it's a quasi-Onah principle. That the halakha generally says that for services, the baseline is that you ought to be providing it at fair market value. You know, you can have other services like yada u'machil that override that, but like certainly in these extraordinary cases, the guy's running away from jail, we're locking into the true value of the service. Does everybody see that? Okay, you look a little skeptical, or...
I'm really skeptical is the wrong word. I'm not sure what you
gain by it.
You mean when, no, I'm not sure what you mean when you say there are multiple ways of like combining them now with other factors.
So
that's where I'm lost. Right?
So why do we keep saying that all you get is this kind of way? Like all you get is appropriate compensation, just compensation, the bar from the Constitution, right? So why is it all you get is just compensation? And why is it we're striking down the bargaining for agreement? So I'm saying that it's because the presumption in halakha is that you can't overcharge for this kind of a service. Right? It has a true or a fair market value, and unless there's like clear intent on both sides to override it, we're not going to override it. That's the Onah way of looking at the sigya.
Okay.
That's different from the first way of looking at the sigya, which says, generally speaking, Gemir is das.
We don't care how much you charge for anything.
Yeah, they always look at where the parties agree on. Right? In rare cases where there's insufficient gemiras das, as evidenced by proof of the Shatan Yibokar or something, then we'll strike it down and fall back on the fair market value. So I'm saying both of these factors will work together, but the question is which one of these is primary and which one is ancillary.
Don't we say that in general there's no nod for Skir's quality?
Yeah, that's a D in here.
It seems as though the Gemara's Das plus, you know, with considerations about onis or mitzvah, where those are narrower.
Yeah. So it's controversial whether there is, it's a machlokas whether there is ona for sefiras poalim. It's also not clear that this case is straightforward sefiras poalim. Because sefiras poalim is usually
ongoing as opposed to particular. It's just kablanos.
Right, it's kablanos, exactly. So it's less obvious that there's no ona here. That's this discussion here, if you want to look into it, and this Pesach Choshen in Ha'ara Nun Zayin. He talks about, why is there, maybe there's ona here because you're not an Eved.
It would seem that
you're more like a Kablan because you're just doing one service of getting him across the road. Same with the Shadchan. The Shadchan's providing a service. The Shadchan's not an ongoing employee.
I would imagine that there would be cases in which you could get the guy on the Gemara Sadas problem even if it's under the threshold for ona. So, say the ona, what's ona usually like?
Six, yeah.
Right. I imagine there are cases where if the expense is large enough and the guy soliciting the labor is poor enough, where you could say if he's under duress, or even if
that's right.
even if it couldn't qualify kind of objectively as ona, you would certainly
strike it down 100% on Gemara's Das ground.
He did it the honest.
That's
by
right.
the way, I think that's probably true, even if. It's less than the fair market. Maybe you wouldn't be able to say that. Maybe that's an independent floor. But in theory, I'm not sure there's a limit to the Gnevus Das consideration. But certainly, I think you could get there to be cases that fall under our rubric that are not ona that are gemiras.
Yeah, for sure. I think that would be an easy way to disentangle like where one is prior and the other one isn't. The third underlying conceptual principle that. Maybe at work in our sigya. So let's move away from just general Gemara Das questions and just general questions of what the fair market value of the service is. But actually, let me just make one point about the fair market value, and that is that there are really different ways of trying to figure out the fair market value. This is where the underlying economic theory becomes important. So how do we price the fair value? Is it based off supply and demand, which would be like a classical way of pricing in classical economics? Is it tirka? Which I think is more of like a Marxist Lockean idea of the labor value, right? That the fair value is the amount of tirfa, the amount of labor that you actually put into providing the service or creating the product. Or we'll see that Mordechai has a comment like this: Is it mashe nahog b'chol yom? Right? What do people usually pay? Which I think is really kind of a form of supply and demand, right? So what's this guy usually get? What's the ferry guy usually getting if he's providing a service under efficient conditions? Right? And then you'll see in other formulations is, you just pay him kipoel bato, right? The amount you pay somebody, like the lowest paid worker who doesn't really do anything, like minimum wage or something. I guess this might be a kind of like, not like subjective to your company, but just usually what do you pay like a mover?
No, right. A pole bustle is somebody who's a pole bustle is a what you it's a pole bustle is a bench player. It's what you get to kind of show up and not work.
I'm not sure if it has that connotation in this context.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think in this context.
Isn't that what it normally means though?
Sometimes it means that. Like how much would a guy pay to not have to show up to work? Yes. I wonder if in this context we'll see it in the Ritva, it just means something like literally like minimum wage. I think you'll see the formulation why I think that. But these are all different ways of trying to figure out what's the fair market value.
Is it trade-specific minimum wage?
Well,
is it profession-specific minimum wage?
I would think so.
Okay.
But we'll see. We'll see the context, and we could weigh in. So there are all sorts of different ways of pricing out, like what's the right compensation, what the just compensation is for these kinds of services, which we'll get to. Now, so this the first one is from Aristotle, the second one is from Na. The third major underlying conceptual issue in the sugya, or conceptual idea at play, is this idea of when you have a duty to provide a mitzvah, you have a duty to provide it. Not only do you have a duty to do the mitzvah, but you have a duty to do the mitzvah at reasonable prices, at a reasonable, unreasonable terms for the recipient. So I think the best way of categorizing is that you have the recipient, the beneficiary, has a Hufeldian claim right to mitzvah assistance at a fair price. And
relatively, you have a duty to provide the obligation, to provide a service at that price.
Now, I think it's uncontroversial that we all have duties to do mitzvos. We have a duty to do mitzvos at great costs, great financial costs. The chiddush here is that part of that duty is to provide it at fair market value. And I think that's what's novel about this sugya. So here are just the formulations in the Rishonim. You have the Mordechai in Simen Bavakama Kofai in Gimel. The reason why the ferry guy is locked into the fair market value is because Chayev Lahatzilo Velital Schar Tarcho. So what do you think of that phrase? Right? He's obligated to save somebody.
What kind of saving
are they talking about?
On the
ferry. The convict's going to die, right? He's going to be shot by the guards. Right? But notice, Chayev Lahatzilo Velital Schar Tarcho, the duty is to just be compensated for your kind of your costs, your tier cut. But I have a duty to assist you at that rate. So not only does the Torah tell me I have to do a mitzvah, but it tells me that it's got to be at a certain amount. And not only is it just a duty, right? It's the duty overrides any agreement or any weak agreement that would supplant it.
I think what agreement?
Any weak agreement displace that pricing. Right? Remember, in the very case, say, I'll give you a dinar, and I'm saying, no, there's a duty to provide that less than that. Right. Same case in the medicine case. The guy says, we'll sell your EpiPen for $1 million. The guy has a duty to help you out by giving you the EpiPen, and then therefore you can only recover scar tear for his costs. Notice the Shita Mukubetzes, Kufta Zayin Amid Aleph, according to Rimi Luniel. Lo Yitin Lo Ela Scharo, Deha Mitzvah Hi Lahatzil Behemas Chavero Bischar. I think the important point here is that the Bischar is supposed to confine or to limit the amount of compensation he could take.
Are you going
to
talk about Taliyah Bezavin?
I don't have much to say about Taliyah Bezavin.
Wouldn't it kind of interfere with the duress?
Yeah, we'll get to the duress discussion in a second.
Doesn't Taliyah Bezavin have something to do with it?
Yeah, we'll get to the duress. Okay. I mean, we'll talk about it in the context of duress, but I don't have much to say about how to distinguish the cases. But I have a thought, though. Okay. I think that Taliyah Bezavin is...
We'll get to it.
Yeah. Notice the Rimi L'Nil. You have a duty to provide the mitzvah, and therefore, Ein lo ela scharo hanahog b'chol yom. All you get is what you usually get. Why? Read the Rimi L'Nil carefully. What does he say here? Cole, what's the reason why you only get your schar hanog b'chol yom, even though you agreed on the higher price? Yeah. So what does that mean? What's the argument here? He's saying that all you get is the usual rate because the convict can say you had a mitzvah, you were doing this as a mitzvah.
Right. So I guess the idea is if you're doing it as a mitzvah, what you're saying is you're not doing it as a service to me.
Yeah.
Right.
So I think this is like a marriage of three and one. Right? He's saying, well, because you have a duty to do the mitzvah, presumably you are acting on that reason, right? The mitzvah reason for providing the service, rather than the bargain for amount reason.
Basically, the obligation to perform the mitzvah occupies the field of compensation for that. It's like the first negligent party. It's like there's already something gobbling up the reason for that labor.
Yeah, which I think almost precludes the bargaining
for preempts the mitzvah. The mitzvah preempts the labor,
yeah.
Right.
Let's actually go a little deeper into this for a second. So we might want to distinguish between two things. So the idea is, one idea is that, as I formulated in number three over there, which is that I have a duty to perform, not only do I have a duty to perform the mitzvah, I have a duty to perform it at a certain rate, right? That's one way of looking at this sugya. The other way of looking at this sugya, which I think is more implicit in this idea of the Rimi L'Nil here, it's that, look, the way Sefirot Polim usually works is we have a bargain for agreement. And then when one party acts on that agreement, there's Haskalas HaMelacha,
that triggers, that locks in, it's like a kinyan on the bargain for amount. What the Rimi L'Anil might be arguing here is that when the Haskalas HaMalacha commenced, the beneficiary can argue, you weren't acting on the basis of the bargain for agreement, you were arguing on the different reason that you had a mitzvah to provide the service. And that precludes, or that preempts, it blocks the bargain for amount from being locked into Haskalas HaMalacha. Because Haskalas HaMalacha doesn't connect to the logical, Haskalas HaMalacha doesn't connect to the bargain for price. Haskalas HaMalacha here actually connects to the mitzvah duty, which you independently have. You see that? Everybody see those two different ideas?
I think that's implicit in the Rimi L'Anil, where he says that the reason why all you get is scharcha nog b'chol yom is dematzi lemeimar le mitzvah hida avadita shem mitzvah hila hatzilin. You're acting on your mitzvah reasons. You weren't acting on our on the price negotiation reasons. Okay. Good. The Ritva in Yevamos Kufvav, commenting on that case of Chalitza, has a similar formulation. He's working off Rashi. He says the reason why the chalitza recipient doesn't have to pay the 200 zuz that were promised is why. Everybody, yeah, you want to read it for us? Sheharei chayev.
Sheharei chayev, who would scroll up with a chmato or a chmato, he did a theta kufa. The day was hard tearful to pull a lata, open a rata.
Yeah. So the reason why the doctor, he's commenting on that case in Yevamos, but now he's referring to a doctor who overcharges for his providing a medical service. And he says he only gets fair compensation. Why?
Because of mitzvah. Chayev hu lechoach b'chachmasa. Midin avedas gufo. Right? You have a duty to help restore someone's health. And therefore what? Vidayo bischar tircho kepoa batel o kefi haroilo. So what's he getting out of this? And therefore it's sufficient to compensate him with schar tircha or as a poel batel. With schar tircha as a poel batel o kefi haroilo. Okay, but how does that follow from the fact that he's chayev lechoach b'chachmasa?
The difference between a poel batel and like an active doctor is tircha b'chachmasa, right? That's what you add to a poel batel. What gets me to being an active doctor is tircha b'chachmasa. So that part
is the difference between the two.
But that's not something I could charge for.
What is it?
The tarach b'chachmasa.
No, it's not that you can't charge. No, it's that you could charge.
No, you're not allowed to charge.
You could, it has value. The point is, you could charge. It's a thing. It's a, you can monetize it. You're not allowed to because it's a mitzvah.
Right.
Would you say that?
That's right. So you're saying you have a duty to be toreach b'chachmasa l'rafoso, and so therefore you can charge for that extra amount. Right, you can charge for the marginal cost of your toreach b'chachmasa, right? So it takes a lot to figure out how to do the surgery and to invest in it. You can't charge for that because you're duty bound to do that anyway. So all you're allowed to charge for is the margin that stems from poel batel or something else.
I wonder if this is related to the idea that, what is it, mitzvos eino, enam lo'onadnesu?
Right. Yeah, you might think that they're very much related, right? You're not allowed to benefit off the obligation to do mitzvos, and so that blocks the kinds of charges you can take, kind of compensation you can take for performing
that. Taken out of the world of reshus, basically. You know, if you're it's taken out of the world of reshus. There you have an option to and an option not to. So to make it worth your while, you charge the guy.
Yeah.
Then it's a reshus. It's a chiyuv, though. You're
bound to the...
Yeah, it's not something you can...
So do you guys see this? Yeah, you see this? So I think our mind.
You're missing a nuance that you're like trying to get out of this.
Is that,
I looked this up just with the previous sheet just what we saw. Maybe there's a nuance here you're trying to communicate.
Yeah, I think it's closer to this idea that you can't charge for the mitzvah duty components. So, but there is some part you are allowed to charge for, i.e. something that's not related to the mitzvah obligation, and that's just worth the amount of po'avada. You see that? It's like a Sar Batala issue, I think. Talk about in Mechantin.
I mean, you would think that even, you know, if I have the duty to perform, I also have the duty to not do mitzvah at this moment. Right. I'm not thinking, you know, Hufaldi and Khan is not my language right now, so I wouldn't be dying in that, but...
Yeah.
In as much as I have an obligation to use my chachma to be Marathi to you, I also have a duty to not, you know, sit on the side and be brought out. Like, it's
right.
Not like I own that right and I'm selling that to you for a fixed amount of money.
Right.
So what is it that I own that I'm at all entitled to any kind of payment for?
Why, you're entitled to any payment?
Yeah.
I think Ramban's saying you're entitled to the... Schar tircha kipol blatal component.
Why?
Why do you get even that amount? Because you have a duty to be toreach? I would say maybe because you're able to recover your costs. So you're able to recover like your costs. You're not able to profit off it, but there is some cost that you're losing by performing the service.
First of all, would it be profit if you got paid based on the tier of the muscle? Like, what is that you worked extra hard and you thought a little more creatively about how to do this? So.
Right, so Ramban says you're not able to, you can't recover for that because you have a duty to do that. Right, you have a duty to heal.
But he's not saying that I can't be employed as a doctor and make profit off of my skills. Right, that's exactly what
Kufi Hamadu
means. Right?
Yeah,
mm-hmm. How many doctors supposed to be? This is the Ritva.
Yeah, but there's a... I'm sorry, I think the words have been thrown around. But yeah, fine, the Ritva, right? So, obviously, I think Kufi Hamadu means there's some sort of, again, regular market rate for being a doctor that you're allowed to charge.
And you think he's just striking down anything above that?
It's not like I'm a doctor. I'm hired to give my services away free of charge.
So it could be that these two formulations, Bishar Torcho Kepol Batel versus Haroilo, are actually wavering on how much compensation he could take. Right?
The first formulation of Bishar Torcho Kepol Batel sounds very minimal. Right? Literally, you're just paying him like a minimum wage. I guess he has to cover his costs or something like that. But anything above that, he's duty bound to provide, and it's not recoverable.
How is any ER doctor supposed to make a living?
They make a schar batala, it sounds like,
right.
on this written review.
That's why ER doctors are paid so thin.
Right.
It's not, you don't compare that, but it's not the same as the question of the right to health care.
Over here?
I think the right to health care analogy is just, I'm using this to motivate the idea that when the halacha obligates you to do certain things, like you have a duty of assistance, right, to help somebody who's about to die, it's intuitive that the duty of assistance comes at a fair price. So take the right to healthcare. People say there's a right to healthcare. They don't mean that I have a right to healthcare no matter what I have to pay for it, right? What they mean is that I have a right to healthcare at like a very good rate.
Right.
So my point is that it makes sense, this idea that the Ritva is appealing to, the Ramiel is appealing to, is that when the halakha obligates you to the duty of assistance, so where it gives you a right to be assisted, it's a right to be assisted at a fair price. That's the crucial idea.
That's the same thing. You're saying that's what the claim is.
Yeah, I think that's exactly what's going on with the Ritva. Slightly distinct from the Ramiel idea,
which seem to be saying that you are acting on the mitzvah component, not acting on the agreement component. You see that?
Right.
Okay.
Right. So then, you know, you're going to like the radical classic issue with this.
What?
The issue you brought up is with the ear doctor, and the other is like the classical issues with right to bring to.
I like the way the objection to the right to health care, of course, is that there's no such thing as a right to a scarce good. But actually, as Cover says in that piece that you assigned at the beginning of the year, it's like, I do think people have a right to health care.
Right.
More importantly, I think we have an obligation to give it to
them. Right.
Right.
So actually, let me follow up on that line of reasoning for a second. Remember one of Cover's points. You guys remember Cover's point about what's the issue with talking about things from a rights based perspective versus a duty based perspective?
So if you talk about the rights matter, you forget about the person providing the service.
That's right. Yeah, you always have to specify the duty bearer, right? And like sometimes you say, right now, who's supposed to provide it? So. There's an analogous problem in this idea, right? Kind of this is a follow-up to Cole's earlier point about what the ER doctor is allowed to charge. So look at this interesting discussion with Ravaz. Same Ravaz we saw earlier about the Matana idea. But look what the Ravaz says here. So remember, he was asked about a case about a doctor who overcharged for his services. And the Ravaz asking that all you have to pay him is fair market value. Based off our Sugya Bereach Mibeis HaAsurim. He cites this idea that we just saw in the Ritva, that a doctor can't overcharge because he has a duty to provide, a duty of assistance. The Chai will not see the Mikalapome Hashavas Abedasa. We try to learn if he has to return somebody's lost object, Kalapomer, Yatinesha Kufo. And that duty of providing the mitzvah vitiates any higher compensation. But then look what he says. And that can be Kalmakam Benidon Didan. So Ben, you want to take it away? Mikalmakam Benidon Didan, She'ain Sham Rofe Muva Kamosa.
Sham Rofe Muva Kamosa.
Yeah. He thinks that there's a distinction to be drawn between a case where there's only one doctor in town who could provide the relevant service, as opposed to a case where there are many doctors who could provide it. Right? So the Radvaz wants to say that everybody will agree that if there's only one person who could provide the service, that person is duty bound to provide it and can only charge a fair price. But if there are a lot of different doctors who could provide the service, then neither of them can be said to have the mitzvah obligation, and Mimela, any one of them could charge more. See that? So there's an issue here. How do you specify the duty bearer?
Smart.
Right? And he's saying, well, in some cases, when we know how to specify it, then that guy's got to provide it at Schar Tircha.
It's smart, but it's a little too clever by half. It's a little too clever by half. The idea that I don't know why he makes that inference. I would have made the opposite one, that in the case of need, there's a universal duty, not a...
Yeah.
I mean, it's...
Not a person specific.
Right. When he's saying, because...
Well, look what he says. He says he says that the reason why the halakha fix you at that rate is because im lo hitzil avar al mitzvah saseh. It's got to be that if you didn't help the guy, you'd be violating mitzvah saseh of helping him out.
Yeah.
But when there's a lot of different people who could equally be providing it, it's like a bystander effect. It's not here that the duty is incumbent on any specific one of them.
Yeah.
And then, if there's no duty to assist, then you can't be obligated to provide it at any given price.
Wait, so that commits you to the view that when the duty is discharged, it was not, in fact, a duty that was discharged? In the original case, there's a switch that you have to make. In the original, in the case where there's only one guy, only one doctor.
We know the duty falls on him.
Well, so is it we know the duty? If we wanted to be consistent, we would have said there's no duty. The duty doesn't fall on anybody. It has to be discharged, and this is the only person who can discharge it. In the case where there are a million doctors, then you could say the duty doesn't fall on anybody in particular, but it has to be, this guy has a right, it has to be, I would have said actually that like the duty falls on anybody who can discharge it.
Yeah, right.
Not that when you discharge it,
that's right.
You have therefore, you heal it.
So I think the Radvaz is thinking that when there are multiple people...
There's no addressee for the accusation
exactly.
In the dereliction or whatever?
Right. So if there are multiple people, each of whom can is sufficient to discharge the duty of assistance, then we can't say that any specific one of them is obligated.
Yeah.
And you have to have that kind of an obligation in order to fall under this this pencil of law.
Say they're all obligated.
Right. I think if you were to recognize that they're all equally obligated, individually obligated,
yeah,
then you would concede a point.
Right.
But I think his metaphysics, or at least his conception, is that in some cases the duty falls upon you, in some cases the duty is just abstract. And
because I want to say, if there are 1,000 doctors and nobody helps the guy, I don't see any problem with going to each doctor. So why didn't
right.
you help? Why didn't you help? Okay. And saying, well, I thought Johnny or Rochelle, the doctor, was going to help him is like a lame excuse.
Right. I hear the argument, but notice how this solves the problem of, like, how's the ER doc supposed to charge?
Yeah,
right. And their advisor is saying that the charging problem only applies in that kind of monopoly
right.
case.
Yeah.
Right.
If you're writing a header for doctors to charge for the service.
Right, correct.
But on the other hand, if you specialize in something very specific,
yeah,
the doctor down in town,
exactly,
all that specialization doesn't help you.
Look, and
right. you have a duty to provide it, that's fair.
Dermatological surgery,
that's right.
Have.
Right. Let me point just a few other areas in halacha where we see this idea of the mitzvah obligation limiting the amount of compensation you can stipulate. So look here at this Mordechai in Sanhedrin citing a truth from Rabbi Berger. Do you want to take it away for us?
Sure. What page is it on?
So we're on page
12. I'm skipping this Sar Dayanim thing.
Yeah, see, I'll just make one comment on the Schar Dayanim thing. Did you get a chance to see this long Shar Mishpat?
I didn't see it.
Yeah. So if you look at this long, if you want to look at this long Shar Mishpat, talks about a case. So the halacha is very clear that, like, Dayanim and, like, Melamdim aren't supposed to charge for their services.
I was wondering how Melamdim charge.
So it's Schar Batala. We say that they're being compensated for their opportunity cost. Not for actually providing the halachic services. Not for discharging the mitzvah.
Which is why we pay them so much, because their opportunity cost is so high.
It usually cuts the other way. Right, well, usually it's like so little, but... I guess it could go, it depends on what the true opportunity cost
is. You could have been a lawyer, or...
Right. Exactly. So there's an interesting question. So Dayanim aren't supposed to charge, because they're supposed to provide it for free on the idea mani b'chinam, just like Hashem provides it for free, His Torah for free, we're supposed to provide it for free. But what happens if b'di'eved, somebody went ahead and actually made a payment? Right, so they weren't supposed to pay, but they went ahead and paid. Can they sue to recover it? This is like a part of the discussion that we have in our sugya. When you front the payment, can you sue to recover it? So this long discussion of the Shaar Mishpat cites a machlokas rishonim about in all these cases where you're supposed to provide the halachic services for free, and someone pays, can you keep them b'di'eved? Now, he basically wants to argue, yes, you can keep it b'di'eved. Which sugya do you think he appeals to prove this? So you can see here, he cites the Bach. You have no halachic obligation to return it because all you did is violate this idea of ma'ani b'china. That doesn't obligate you to return. And he says, I could bring a proof for this idea from our sugya. Right, where the Gemara seems to say, we saw some Rishonim that if you front the payment, you can't sue for recovery. So he clearly thinks that our sugya is following that idea of the Ritva and the Rimu Neil, that our sugya is about your duty to provide a mitzvah, in which if you put that together with the Rishonim who thought that fronting the payment is binding, then you can't recover. You guys see that move? That's the move of the Shaar Mishpat over here. Yeah, you have a comment? Okay. Good. So why don't you take us through the Mordechai? Oh, sorry about that. I just wanted to see if Yakir is there. He tells his rich son-in-law that he'll pay him to study with his grandson. Right? So meaning, I tell my son-in-law who's rich, study with your son and I'll compensate you. Okay?
Hutter Ruben, given the lot of money due, Kubalam Bakri, Mitzvah Lamed at the end.
Yeah. So what's the idea here?
That you shouldn't get paid for being a Lamed. You're not allowed, you're not able to pay for being a Lamed unless you're a Lamed.
Yeah, so the only thing is a little complicated why that's an exception. But yeah, but the idea here is that my inducement to the son-in-law is not binding because the son-in-law has a duty anyway to teach his kids. So it's like the same, structurally the same idea as we've seen in our sugya. Right? A bargain to discharge a duty that you already have is not going to be binding. See that?
Is
it? But there doesn't seem like you're even getting some of the problem. That's very strange.
Yeah, it's interesting. Why over here is there no compensation at all? Right? You might say it's just unique to the case that a father has a duty to pay for his son's education without recovering. He can't sue his son to recover the cost of the education. So since a father has a duty to provide it for free, then you can't recover anything. Whereas a doctor only has a duty to provide it at fair market value or something. That would be the idea.
I have to go to...
What kind of scruff is here? Sorry.
All right, fine.
Okay.
It starts at 12:15.
Yeah. Stick around for a little longer. Notice this makes its way into the Shulchan Aruch here in Simon Shin Lamed Vav. Hey, why are we missing Zolti and Eitan today, no? Where are they on?
They knew I was going to be here in person.
Yeah. But you're scarier when you're over the recording because then we can't.
We can't meet you.
The
Shulchan Aruch and Simon Shin Lamed Vav quotes this idea. Also makes its way into Simon Pei Aleph. So just note, note the discussion in Simon Pei Aleph and Shulchan Aruch. Misha Amar Lechosno Ha'ashir Tilmod in Bin Chavaniyah Mishalim Lechapater. Uvelavachi Chayev Lamed in Bino. So Yachal Lomar Mishata Hayisi Becha. Right? Meaning the grandfather has the right to say, I was just messing around with you because you had a duty to do it anyway. So notice that this seems to marry the idea of insufficient Gemiras Das with the duty to perform the mitzvah at the either fair market value or for free.
The mitzvah is the amtala in this case.
Yeah, meaning like you were acting on the mitzvah reason, not on the...
That's what, in other words, the mitzvah is what gives you the
justification
for the
it shows that I didn't have true das.
Correct.
I was just inducing you to perform the duty that you already have.
How do we know that you're not making it up? Is you
That's right.
Which is different from, would you make it different from like telling pleasant talk?
That's right. Here's an analogous principle, very much related. The Shulchan Aruch and the postgame discuss what happened. So remember we spoke about the idea of Yorei?
Yorei looked at Saddle.
Yeah, so you go and you confer a benefit on somebody.
Yeah.
So generally you could recover for the value of the service. But what happens if you confer a benefit of Talmud Torah on somebody? So I go and I teach your son Torah. Can I sue you for the value of the benefit? So Shulchan Aruch here quotes two deos about this. Shulchan Aruch and Simon Shin Lamed Hei. Amalamid im ben chaber shalom idas av. Yesh omrim dechayev l'shalim lo kedina yori l'toch sada shal chaber shalom bershus. So some say you could recover. The Yesh Cholkin, the Chuvah Sarashba disagrees and says you cannot recover. Why could you not recover? So the Taz there says, the Afshar Mishum Mitzvah Ka'avid Hala, Shalomed Imo V'lo Mishum Tashlumin. Because the father of the son who benefited could say, you were acting on your mitzvah duty, not with the intent to be compensated.
Oh, this answers a question that I had. I was wondering, last year, I was wondering whether I think I asked you this question, if you pay a guy to guard, if you're negligently not guarding your shore, which you have to do, and I pay a guard to guard your shore, can I sue you for compensation?
Yeah.
And this answers that. So this is that machlokas.
I think I have a mitzvah.
To do it, and I'm fulfilling your chiyuv, right? So
that's right.
That's this. All right, great. I'm going to investigate.
So here you have, I mean, analogous thing in YU, right? YU always tries to charge like the Columbia guys who come for Shear,
yeah.
Right? Well, they try it. I think they've tried, right? Or
the right thing to do is to make a contribution to REITs.
Right. But the question is, do they have a claim right for compensation? Right here, we're conferring this benefit. And you might say that on the Taz Shulchan Aruch argument, it's like, no. Right? You have a duty to teach Torah. It's not the kind of thing that you could demand. If you contract for compensation for fair market value, that's one thing. Right? But to just provide and then demand compensation, arguably, are you not entitled to.
Your father's also allowed to do it for free. Meaning the guy, why he doesn't have a leg to stand. People are allowed to have whatever they want this year.
But yeah. It's not the same as your case or the case of why either, right? Here, the reason that you don't get paid for your rate is because you have obligations.
Right. Well, in the short case, the thing is, right. The thing is, can you say that the person who's paying is providing some duty of shmirah or something like that?
Right.
And then it's a question, is he just satisfying a mitzvah?
But it's not my obligation to protect your clothes from damage, right?
That's right.
On a fit, you want to say it's also a bit of kufa or whatever.
That's right. Cole, are you leaving us now? Or?
Yeah, I...
You're not going to stick around for the...
I'm not here from your father.
Right. Hashkafa or regular?
Hashkafa. I don't know.
Right.
Mine.
All right. We'll see you later, Cole.
See you soon.
So, that's really the discussion of the...
I should also say, I'm going to go to 1220.
Oh, my gosh.
So sorry.
It was a disaster today.
It's a rebellion.
Yeah. All right. So,
we know we could have started 15 minutes earlier.
Well?
We know we could have started 15 minutes
yeah,
earlier.
Yeah. That's right. All right, so we have 3 minutes, 2 minutes. Okay, the last major view in the sugya is the duress. Right, that's the Ramban Shita in Torah Sa'adam. So the Ramban interprets all these sugyas as mipnei dochak hasha, and he summarizes them: shamir mina dechol demasni b'schiras yosher mechtei dam mipnei onis dochak hasha shlo yochalor mishat ani b'cha. Right, that's the general upshot. I think there are two distinct ways you can interpret ones. Either ones is a hekatimti for saying that there's no gemiras das. So you remember this depends on what we think is significant about what constitutes gemiras das, right?
Right.
Every
other theory is sort of subservient to gemiras das.
Yeah. So this is what you can read all these
right.
things.
And I like that because the sugya says mishata nibacha, and it
yeah.
sounds like a das.
Exactly. That's right. But you might say that mishata nibacha is just like the amasla. Like, Mishat HaNibachah is just the excuse for why you said it.
I know. I'm not married to it as, like, a, you know, it's sure. necessary to
but there's certain elements. There's a certain elements to it.
Yeah.
The other way of looking at it is that it's not that duress vitiates the Gemiras Das, but they're like policy considerations that even though there are Gemiras Das, even though there is Gemiras Das, we don't think it's fair to lock people into agreements that they made under duress. Right? So you might say that there are, like, policy considerations here that... we want to deter people from price gouging and inflating their demands for compensation under by exploiting somebody's conditions. And so we just say, oh, you're not going to get that amount if you enter into an agreement under duress, even though there is gemiras das. Right? Now, the Ramban himself does say, he mentions mishat anibacha, but I think it's an open question whether mishat anibacha is evidence of the gemiras das issue. What's up, Danny? Okay, we'll finish up a second, yeah. Whether it's evidence of the Gemiras Das issue, or whether it's a policy consideration that will allow you to renege on that agreement once you have an excuse for why you made the claim that you did.
Right.
Yeah.
And the amount could be understood as some sort of like, you know, we never want to explicitly just reject agreements that people seem to make intentionally. So the only way we're going to allow ourselves to do it is when we have some sort of excuse, some sort of way to...
That's right. I mean, so it's like lo taininan le, we're not going to make the claim for you.
Right.
But you have to have something to say about like why you said what you said at the time.
Right. Well, so that sounds good. I mean, it's possible, I can imagine, unless I say, no, it's not that you've said Mishat HaNibachah, it's that we'll make the claim for you, Mishat HaNibachah. Right? As long as we have a leg to stand on him.
Yeah. There has to be some...
Undercutting an agreement made... apparently consensually between two parties.
There has to be some legitimate interpretation of the facts.
Right.
Right? We have to make sense. We have to render the facts coherent in some way.
Right. Because we don't want to give halacha the authority to undercut agreements willy-nilly for policy considerations.
That's right. Let me just make one 30-second point. The Pesachei Choshen here is an interesting observation that presumably this ones is only for ones haguf. The only time that the Ramban would actually allow this duress argument is if there's like ones to your body. But of course, if it's ones machmas mamon, then you wouldn't be able to say mishatani b'chai. So that would be crazy.
Ones machmas mamon mean in the context of overpaying for a day.
The idea is that if I didn't enter into this agreement, I would have lost a ton of money. So like, you know, suppose you have the same ferry case condition. Right, so you need to get across the bridge because you have a shipload of stuff that's coming on the other side, and you have to get to it. If not, someone's going to steal it. Right, not because your life's in danger, or not because there's some threat to your bodily integrity.
I mean, yeah, there's something sort of intuitive about it also. That, you know, the kind of economics, right? I'm paying some amount of money that I'm willing to pay in order to prevent myself from order or loss. Like,
right.
Not...
But you might say, though, in terms of the Kamira Das, it's the same point.
Right.
In terms of Gemara's Das, who cares whether it's onus machmas mamon or onus machmas nefashos? Right, you still didn't have intent to actually pay it. Right, you just were under duress because you needed to.
I mean,
save
the merchandise. The way I would conceptualize it would be to say that in the case of onus haguf, onus nefashos, really, like, no number in the context of money means anything to me in the context of nefashos. Like, I'll do whatever I need to pay to save
right.
my life.
But in mamon, there is some.
But in mamon, obviously, crossing the bridge costs more than the money I would
right.
lose. I wouldn't pay it. So like, I'm still thinking in rational economic terms, but
that's
maybe more substantial.
Right. It's possible. I think it's not going to work in all cases. And then he says he's not sure about what happens when it's not sakanas nefashos, but it's hatzala mitzar. So it's interesting, you're talking about, is it a rational decision making? Right? So he says, well, it's an interesting question whether you're not going to lose your body, you're not in danger, but you could undergo a lot of pain.
Right.
If you don't get the service. So people aren't always rational under those conditions, right? So you need some sort of anesthesia.
Right. So because the physician isn't sure about it, he doesn't have body.
All right. Well, he says he's misupuk about the...
Right. Maybe he's not sure if people are rational when it comes to pain.
That's right.
You know? I mean, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, talks about, like, rational consideration. A certain amount of money...
How much would you pay to... Yeah,
but presumably no amount of money a person would take in order to be killed.
Right. Well, it's not clear. I think Mara says that some Rishonim don't think that the Shinuk Betzes and Pesachim, I think, thinks that Shinuk Betzes and Pesachim thinks that you might have Yehar Gval Yavar, but not torture Gval Yavar. Right. So that's the sometimes pain is treated more severely than
right. But that's not an economic claim.
Yeah.
Like I can still maintain the Shinuk Betzes without
right. So he's Mesubik. He says the only time Tainus Onis would work is for Nefashos, that's not going to work for an Ones Mamon. He's Mesupuk whether it would work for an Ones of Tsar Gadol. But not Pesach Nefesh. All right, yeah, you got to go?
Yeah, thank you.
All right, so we just stop here and talk about the Kenyan aspect. Let me see who's on the... All right, we'll stop here. We'll talk about the Kenyan aspect at the end of next Kabura. All right?
Great.